Elwyn Yafele, nice to meet you. Obviously, I came across you because the story came out on the university website about you, and that's quite nice, really, because you do get to meet people that you wouldn't otherwise. Now, we our paths haven't crossed because we're on different campuses actually, and we do different things. Firstly, could you introduce yourself, tell us about your role at the university, and also a little bit of how you got into that role, your kind of journey to where you are, please.
Thank you ever so much, Steve, for having me on. It's a real privilege.
Good to have you.
I'm Elwyn Yafele, and I joined USW as Associate Dean for the Business School. Just to tell you a little bit about my background, so I grew up in Zimbabwe. So I was born in Zimbabwe, and my mum did secure a job teaching here. So when I finished my A levels, I then joined mum in Dorset and Poole. So I then went to Bournemouth University, where I did my first degree and carried on through to my PhD and started my first academic role at Bournemouth University. But it was a bit of a weird situation for me because I still felt a bit like a student because I was now colleagues with all the people that had taught me through my undergraduate, supervised me, and all the rest of it. So in conversations with some colleagues, they did suggest, well, it might be a good idea to sort of move around, get an understanding of the HE landscape, at which point I then moved to UWE in Bristol. Started as a lecturer in financial accounting, moved on to be a program director, and later on, associate head of department for accounting, economics, and finance. I was also the faculty lead for international student and staff mobility, was also co-opted by Steve West, Vice Chancellor, onto the Board of Governors, where I learned a lot about how the university works. About how decisions are made and how they filter down to the various arms of the university. And I was also a member of the academic board. On leaving UWE, I joined Cardiff Met as head of department for business management and law. So this was a transition for me, really, from accounting and finance to business management, but quite an interesting one that I thoroughly enjoyed. A few months into starting the role, I was contacted by Kara Aitchison, the Vice Chancellor, who asked me if I would be interested in leading the Race Equality Charter project for the university. I was more than delighted to lead that particular project. So that is one of the contributions that I made at Cardiff Met University. However, I left after about 3.5 years to join USW. But the real intention at the time was to move back to Dorset to be with the family. However, I was determined that I needed to be in a job that's right for me, a job that I'm passionate about, a job that interests me. And I couldn't really find anything at the time that sort of ticked all those boxes. So when I saw the post at USW, I was very excited about it. And I'm thoroughly enjoying the role now that I'm about 5 months into the post. Already, I'm seeing that a lot of my colleagues are excited and enthused about what the future looks like for the business school.
You've done a lot kind of really quickly, in my opinion. It didn't maybe not feel quickly to you, but you went into study, you did well, you academically did well, you immediately sort of started teaching, and then you've kind of just jumped from fairly senior role to even more senior role as you've gone along. This is a weird question to ask somebody, but I'll ask you,
That's all
if you
right.
could, looking like yourself, like objectively, right, you and your career, why do you think those kind of senior roles are opened up for you? Has it happened sort of organically? Has it been something you've sought? Is it a mixture of those two?
I wouldn't say it happened organically, probably further down the line. How it all started was I've always been, ambitious. I want to do well. I want to be the best at something. Long story, I'll tell you all about
Yeah, if you need that one, we need that
that.
one.
When I went into academia, the real goal was to eventually become a professor. I could see myself being a professor in the next, 10, 12 years' time. But because of situations, I was always asked to cover certain things, support with some additional responsibilities, and my research didn't really pick up in the way that I hoped it would. I did have some concerns about my career development, at which I had conversations with my line manager at the time, who then suggested some alternative routes. So I then tried out being, program director, which then led to being an associate head of department at UWE. And the roles that I thoroughly enjoyed whilst on that journey, I had a lot of, well, I say a lot, I had two people in particular who were very supportive and very invested in my career progression. They always used to offer their, in many cases, unsolicited advice, which I
Nice.
gladly received.
Yeah.
But they wanted me to do well. And one of the things, one of the messages that I still remember from one of my mentors was that if you are asked to help out or do something, always say yes. I grew so much because I was involved in so many projects. I had an acute understanding of how the various areas within the business operate. And it helped me to firm up in terms of identifying pathway that I wanted to take for my personal career progression. So I then moved away from saying yes to everything and could almost sort of streamline and choose the path. So I said yes to things that were relevant to the direction of movement in terms of where I saw myself. So kind of shifted from wanting to be a researcher to wanting to be an academic leader, a manager, taking that alternative route.
So you've done lecturing. You obviously are, still, I believe, actively engaged in research, and now you're in the management side of things, yeah? So got a favorite bit?
Which bit is most enjoyable? I think I've learned to enjoy the management bit. I
Okay.
really struggled to make that transition because I always viewed myself as an academic, and part of that, I wanted to be on the front line. I wanted to be in front of students,
Yeah, that's what I was kind
delivering
of
and
leading
sharing my
towards.
knowledge. Yeah. And I remember one of the conversations that I had with one of my line managers was that I cannot do everything. And as I progress with my career, I need to think about the bigger picture and how I can support others to do well in those frontline roles. So it took a lot of hard work to move away from being involved with the teaching, which I thoroughly loved and still love. So what I actually do now, although I'm not involved with the teaching, I do always offer myself up for guest lectures. I
Oh, well
always offer
done.
myself up to meet with students. So like during induction week, I always do the rounds and go and introduce myself and talk about my story to students, particularly at master's level where we have a sizable proportion of international students. I feel that they relate to my story and I like sharing that with them in the hope that it inspires them and shows them where they can get to and beyond. Yeah, I love being in front of students, but I have learned that it's not possible given my current responsibilities now. So I use any opportunity that I can to be with them, but I do try not to detract myself from, focusing on bigger picture governance oversight.
Firstly, well done for I'm honestly mean that, it's really, I think it's really excellent, somebody like yourself, when you've reached that kind of level, that you still do some teaching, because it's like in my game, I'm a radio audio podcasting guy. I'm worked in professional radio for years. I've been here over 20 years, by the way, but that's my thing. So I try to keep abreast of what's happening in the industry. I try to keep connections. I try to keep my finger in. I still do some stuff, and I think it works the same. It works the same with, I think, with management at universities. You've got the knowledge, you can teach, you have that knowledge, and I think it's really, really good. And I think also think it's really good for other lecturers as well to work alongside you. So I applaud you for that. Well done. I think that's a really good thing to do. Keep on
Thank
doing it,
you.
I would say. Yeah.
Thank you.
I just wanted to ask you about your name, because when we were chatting about it earlier, it was quite interesting, because it's spelt AYLYWIN. So I asked you how it was pronounced, and it wasn't how I expected at all. In fact, it's pronounced in very much a Welsh way, but you come from Zimbabwe. So what's all that about?
I I don't, that's the question I always ask my parents. So I was born in Zimbabwe. But yeah, my parents gave me that name. We don't have any Welsh connections. And it's only, I didn't even realize that it was a Welsh name until I started working in Wales, because everyone just presumed that I'm Welsh on seeing my name. So it is by pure coincidence that I'm working in Wales, but I also think that it's meant. I feel like I'm home because I've been accepted, and I thoroughly enjoy, and I'm very much invested in contributing to the local communities, societies, and yeah, and the sector in general.
Are you enjoying your time in Wales? I can take that, can I?
I don't know if I can say this, but this is the first time in a job where I feel that amongst all the challenges and managing multiple demands, that I feel I actually still have space to do my actual job outside of the firefighting. I also feel that there's a lot that I can contribute to. So I'm usually excited. I've thoroughly enjoyed my time. I've only been here for 6 months. One of the things that has made it a really, really enjoyable experience for me is how I've been received by colleagues. Everyone has been thoroughly generous with their
Nice.
time, information, and that has really helped me to understand what the university is about, why we do things the way we do. And it has also helped me in thinking about what the future for the business school should look like. So yeah, brilliant, brilliant experience. And absolutely, this is my favorite job. Of all the jobs I've had, this is my favorite.
That's the right answer. Have we learned any Welsh? Has anyone tried to teach you any Welsh at all? Little bits of Welsh?
So I'll tell you about Welsh. I haven't learned Welsh, and I feel awful about
Just a
that.
couple of words is good,
However,
and yeah.
I am an advocate of the language. So when I was at Cardiff Met, one of the things that surprised me when I started working in Wales was, I mean, when I applied for the job, I thought, well, I'm really going to struggle because I don't know Welsh. And then when I did start working there, the expectation was that, half the courses are going to be delivered in Welsh and such like. So I was surprised at how little is conveyed through the medium of Welsh. And I then joined a few discussion groups about the Welsh language. And I then later on offered to become the lead for Welsh provision in the Cardiff School of Management. Sat down, wrote a plan, and worked with Coleg Cymraeg in terms of developing Welsh provision within Cardiff School of Management. And also managed to bid for some resource. So I then recruited a lead for Welsh medium provision in the Cardiff School of Management. And now there is a structure and a mode in which we have provision through the medium of Welsh. I mean, we did have some in the past, and then it sort of waned, and then it was sort of coming back. But one of the things that I identified was having proper structure around ensuring that the provision continues and grows. So I've been an advocate around that. And when I joined USW, one of the conversations that I had, there seems to be a market interest in delivery of our MBA programs through the medium of Welsh. So that is a conversation again that I've involved myself in. So in one sense, I need to learn the language. I'm also very cognizant of the importance of the language and ensuring that it continues and grows.
That's kind of interesting, isn't it? Zimbabwe and encouraging people in Wales to speak Welsh is it's kind of a kind of a kind of an unusual, but yeah, again, that's great to see. And I agree with you. It is, after all, the capital city of Wales. So I don't speak much Welsh. I did my Welsh GCSE when I left school many years ago, just a night school, just to get some Welsh. But I don't speak it. But I think it's certainly a USP for Welsh universities. If they could deliver some of
Absolutely.
that stuff in Welsh, would be good. I wanted to lead you into the kind of research territory, because I was looking at some of the research that you've conducted. Maybe you could tell me about the kind of things that you tend to engage in research.
So research is an interesting one for me because I don't consider myself a researcher, and part of that is because of how my career has turned out. So I wanted to become a professor when I entered. However, because of circumstances and many reasons, I wasn't able to pursue that particular trajectory. However, I don't want people to end up in the same place where they drop research because they're having to cover some additional lectures, or they have to take on some additional responsibilities. So, throughout my career, what I've done is support colleagues who want to do research and make sure that we have created. In fact, I'll give you a practical example of something that I did in my last role. So, the level of research activity in my department was less than where I would have wanted to see it. I knew there were some people who were interested in research, but weren't sure how to get started or who to talk to. There are always central facilities, but it can be quite nerve-wracking when you're approaching a central service without any clear ideas about where you want to take your research. So I formed what we called a CORP, a community of research practice. So this used to run 8 weeks of the semester, each semester, and it was only a 45 meetup within the department. So it would cover a range of topics from how do I get started in research, how do I choose a journal, how do I get published in a three or
It's a
four
great idea.
star, how do I, all of those. It used to be a sort of 45-minute meetup. 15 minutes was general chat, finding out where people want to take their work. 15 minutes was someone doing a presentation on the topic of the day, and 15 minutes was a conversation, so a Q&A around that topic of the day. So it was very short, sharp, but what actually happened out of those conversations was that within School of Management, we had the highest success in terms of applying for research, internally funded research time in the school. So it really created a buzz around research within the school. Now, in terms of my own research, what I have done over the years is being involved in a range of projects rather than having a specialist area. My PhD was on KPIs, the disclosure of KPIs. So I was specifically looking at a mandate from the EU, which required large listed companies to disclose their KPIs. So this is useful information for investors, investment decisions, and other stakeholders. And my research was really looking at how useful the KPIs being disclosed by those large companies are. Is it just a tick box exercise, or is there real quality in terms of informativeness of those KPIs that they're disclosing?
Just Alwyn, just to say for those people who don't know what a KPI is, can you just
Oh, I'm
say?
sorry.
Cool.
Yes. So a KPI is a key performance indicator, may include critical success factor. So it is just a way in which an organization can measure its performance. So you set a target against a performance benchmark. So for a supermarket, it could be footfall, for instance. So they want, 3,000 people through their doors on a daily basis. So you then monitor that footfall across the year. Those were some of the measures that are then required to be reported in the annual report. Alongside that, I always had an interest in diversity. So I had plenty of data from my PhD. So I then started looking at gender diversity on senior leadership teams and on board of governors within large listed companies. And a lot of the indications at the time were that more diverse boards, so boards that had more women, boards that had people from a range of nationalities, people that had different characteristics were more innovative, they're more creative. They tended to have
Interesting.
a higher profitability rate than the less diverse boards. Their stock prices used to perform better. And it was all because of the range of ideas being brought into
Wow.
that boardroom. So that was really interesting
Yeah.
research.
Sorry, yeah. Well, that's really significant in terms of this conversation and this podcast. I wanted to get you into the realm of, diversity and, things like decolonization and all this kind of stuff, because I know you've done a lot of research in that territory.
Yes.
But I also wanted to ask you about how creativity plays a role in what you do. And what you just said was just a really fantastic answer, actually, but you might want to expand on slightly. What I find about doing this podcast is when you get the chance, if you get the chance to listen back to through some, and there's a fantastic range of people. When I ask about, what does creativity mean to you and how does it kind of run through what you do in your daily life, working life, because they're all doing different things. They all just they all say different things. But what you've just said, again, which is great when it happens, I've never heard that before. That's fantastic. So could you maybe just expand on it in terms of kind of creativity within the kind of the business domain, I suppose, through the idea of welcoming a diverse characteristic to those involved, isn't that really?
Yeah. So what I've generally found from my research and from, personal experience is that where you have less diversity in management teams, less diversity at governance level, a lot of people have shared experiences. Those shared experiences will not necessarily serve the
Yeah.
communities with which those organizations operate in effectively and appropriately. But when you start bringing in people from different nationalities, people from different races, people of different ability, different genders, what they will also bring to the boardroom table, aside from their specialist knowledge, is their personal experiences affect them in the day-to-day world. It means that the conversation that is had is looking at different angles, is more balanced. You're making more considerations around how the decisions you make in the boardroom affect a broad range of people with different characteristics. Those type of boards, those type of management teams tend to be more creative. They tend to be more innovative. They tend to perform better because of the diverse range of knowledge, diverse range of experiences that are being brought into the boardroom conversations or, management conversations.
Yeah.
And there are also other things. For example, I remember when I was working on the Race Equality Charter project, one of the things that we sort of spoke about and debated about for a long time in my previous role was around reporting of race-related incidences. And the argument at the time from the university was that actually we do have a mechanism for reporting, but that mechanism required for individuals to identify themselves. But what that in fact did was that a lot of the people who were affected by sort of race-related adverse issues feared reporting because they weren't sure what would
Yeah,
happen to
yeah,
them
yeah.
on reporting. And we had a long conversation about anonymous reporting. So one was arguing that, well, if we don't know who is reporting and who is affected, we don't know how to support them because we don't know who they are. But at the same time, the counter argument was when you're in fear or unsure about the consequences of reporting a particular issue or an incident, what will effectively happen is that you empower the perpetrators
Yep.
and the issues that are happening don't come to light. And naturally, what will also happen with the system is that the amount of reports will spike because people are confident in the system, but that doesn't mean that the
Yeah.
amount of incidents happening has increased. So it's having these open conversations and looking things at from different perspectives that sort of helps us to make the right decisions for our range of stakeholders within, any organization.
Yeah, again, that's really interesting. I mean, just to say, I work with a faculty of business and creative industries these days, so it features the word business. But I'll mention a couple of things very quickly before I move on, is I'm working on launching a student radio station with a lad who's based up at Treforest. Actually, his name's Dwaké Sorondeen. He's got an interesting station, which is very diverse, very multicultural, and taking advantage of all of the kind of things you've been talking about, really, to give a nice breadth of interest to quite an unusual student radio station, which we're coming on to. Sticking with the theme then of decolonization, why is it so important now? Because a lot of universities, including the University of South Wales, 2030 curriculum objectives and all the rest, you know, we're all looking at this decolonization issue, right? Why does it really matter? And why is it so crucial that we get this right now?
Before we talk about decolonization itself, as a university, we're in the business of educating students. We're in the business of creating better communities, serving the communities within which we operate. And what I have found, especially when I was doing the race equality work in my previous role, was that we place the importance on the project over the business. So race equality is not about prioritizing the race matter alone. But what we're saying is businesses should do what they're in business to do. However, in going about their business, they should make full consideration of how race impacts various people, how their decisions impact people of different races, etc. So that's the first thing. Now, in terms of the decolonizing aspect, I think that when we come to the UK, for instance, it's a majority white population. So I can give you an example of medicine. I don't know why medicine, but we'll run with that.
Yeah, fine.
Okay. So if we take medicine, for example, there are certain medical disorders that are more prevalent in minority ethnic people. So if you take things like sickle cell anemia, type 2 diabetes, things like rickets, they're very unusual amongst the white local population. Mm-hmm. Now, the systems that we have in place are systems that were structured for a white majority population.
Yeah.
But the country has since become more diversified. It has become more inclusive ever since. But we still operate under these structures, which were designed and developed for a white majority. So some of the things we do may not be intended to cause any ill harm, but the fact that they were designed for a certain population in the first instance, yep, means that they do a disservice to
great
the people
example
that need it.
Yeah.
So that's the whole point around decolonizing, is recognizing those differences, recognizing how the systems serve a wide variety of people, different characteristics of people. And that's why it's important to really talk about decolonizing. But it is not about prioritizing race over what businesses are there to do. It's about taking into considerations within our decision making, how do those decisions affect different clientele? How do they affect students? How do they affect people from different genders or different sexual preferences, etc.?
So what I really like about that is not only was that a great analogy, the medical analogy, it makes complete sense because you're talking about systems, you know, systems management, really, is also how you said with the business model about diversity within the business model and also about awareness and recognition of, if you like, you know, issues pertaining to decolonization. Not only is it the right thing to do, it is also strategically beneficial, isn't it? You know,
that, so
it works, just works. It's just a win-win, isn't it?
Absolutely, totally.
Yeah, that's all good. I just want to ask you one more thing, Elwin, yeah, because you mentioned it earlier and it sounded so good. I thought I got to go back to this at the end. So you said about you need to be the best. Could you want to tell me a bit about that?
Oh. So
I couldn't resist, Elwin, sorry.
The story of my life. So ever since I was always very competitive, you know. I always wanted to be the best. And one of the things that has sort of led me to doing different things and progressing with my career at a relatively fast pace is because when I was in school, you know, I played a lot of sports. So I played cricket, I played tennis, played a bit of rugby.
Play golf now as well, don't you?
I play golf now.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Golf is really interesting because I just won a couple of competitions.
Oh, wow. Well done.
At my club. So I won it was back in November. I won the Poppy Appeal competition, which was a field of 66 players. So came first in that one and also came second in, you know, a couple of other competitions.
So you're so competitive, but still there, aren't you?
So I'm very competitive. And in terms of, the things that I've done, with a lot of things that I've put my hand to, I've been very good, but I've never been the best. There's always been someone who's better. And I was thinking, oh, you know what? I'm going to find something. And that's when I've moved on to other things. And I've done that in my career where, I've always wanted to learn from people who are the best at something as I develop myself. But I've always found myself not being the best at anything. However, what I then realized after a while is that actually, if you put me in a room with medical doctors, if you put me in a room with politicians, if you put me in a room with business management academics, I can make a sensible contribution. I know something about the area. So I hate to use the phrase jack of all trades, but my skills are so diverse and I've made real contributions and real learning in a very wide range of areas. But what I do very well is I have the ability to think about the bigger picture and how all of those things come together and how they coordinate and how we can coordinate them in terms of achieving wider institutional goals. So, whilst I don't see myself as the best at any one thing, I am very proficient at a wide range of things.
Great, yeah, I like that. I mean, I was talking to my daughter's home for Christmas. She's in her third year in Exeter. She was talking about she had a she knew one of the lecturers. She knew she the older students like this person because he just goes around saying hello to people all day. And I said, oh, I do that. I talk to anyone, I just talk to anyone like all day, but whatever level, it doesn't matter, I think it's just a good thing to do. In terms of creativity, be it brief as expansive as you like, really, on this. In terms of creativity and in terms of like managing an academic institution, right? How does creative thinking play into the way that these sort of strategic plans are shaped up? In terms of your, working life at that level at the university, how do you think you're creative in what you do and how it's done?
That's a very, I don't know if I mentioned that my background is in accounting and finance.
Yes, no, that's yeah. Yeah. No, still creative, still creative.
I'm a very matter of fact person.
Well,
However, in terms of
that's even better because you've got to think about it from that view, Yeah.
I suppose from a creative lens, I don't know if we can call it creative, but what I've always wanted to do and what I've always wanted for the organizations that I work for is looking at what the challenges are and looking at how we address those challenges. If I give you an example of business schools, I've worked in, at least four business schools, and one of the things that I've noticed across business schools is that we're very good at talking about what we do. But when you do scratch the surface, what you often find are pockets of really, really good practice, but it doesn't necessarily run through across the whole curriculum or across the whole school. At USW, one of the things that we talk about is that we're the business school of tomorrow. We talk about a challenge-based curriculum, industry-informed, applied curriculum. And we have a lot of that happening, but it doesn't necessarily happen across the whole curriculum. And for me, those are the sort of things that I make observations on and I want to address. We've now started doing some work on, okay, how do we make sure that we get to a point of if we stop any student in the corridor and ask them how they engage with the real world, engage with industry through their course, they're able to articulate it. How do we get ourselves to a point where if we ask that same question to any academic, they're able to articulate it comprehensively? And some of the things that we have started doing are looking at the relationships that we have with industry. And instead of having the odd guest speaker, we're looking at, no, we want to grow those relationships. So we want to talk about internships opportunities. We want to talk about work shadowing, industry visits. We want to talk about consultancy projects with which we co-create assessments and our students are involved in devising solutions to those problems. Our students then present their solutions to those institutions. We also want to think about how do we, because we're a knowledge hub, so how do we share our knowledge with them through KTP activity, through CPD in exchange? So we run a lot of short courses around leadership and management, digital transformation, project management. You know, it's a very wide range. So instead of us going to organizations and just asking for a guest speaker, no, we want to have a relationship with you. We want to create a truly immersive experience for our students and for our academic staff, but we also want to support them with their own professional development. We want to provide them with a talent pipeline, and we want to make a real contribution to the business that they run through consultancy work, through knowledge transfer. So for me, I don't know if that's innovative, but I want to approach this from a very holistic manner and have wholesome relationships with industries where everyone within the institutions, the academics, the students, and the companies can benefit from that mutual relationship. And that's the direction of movement for USW Business School. And that is what will truly set us apart, because we don't just talk the talk, but we walk the walk.
See, for somebody who knew nothing about creativity, what a good answer that was. Elwin, thanks very, very much. I really enjoyed chatting with you. Yeah, happy Christmas. I hope you enjoy yourself. Have some fun with your family. Happy New Year to you. And thank you very much for talking to me today.
Oh, thank you ever so much for inviting me, and I wish you a very Merry Christmas too.